The Carmelo Anthony trial has erupted into a full-blown circus of racial division, media manipulation, and street-level chaos right in the heart of Collin County, Texas.
Only good cracker is a dead cracker. Only good cracker is a dead cracker. Only good cracker is a dead cracker. Only good cracker is a dead
cracker. Black murderers! Black racists start murdering white people!
We cannot allow this injustice to stand!
What began as a tragic stabbing at a Frisco High School track meet in April of 2025, where 17-year-old Austin Metcalf was fatally knifed in the chest, has now devolved into a national powder keg. Carmelo Anthony sits in the courtroom with a haircut making him appear younger, while jury candidates admitting that they wouldn't convict such an innocent-looking child, resulting in a jury pool of hundreds narrowed down with zero black jurors.
Okay, also, I just noticed this headline, baby-faced Carmelo Anthony heads to court to stand trial for murder. Now, one thing that I forgot to report to you guys yesterday, because I did get to go inside the courthouse and I was watching the live stream of the jury selection, is that Carmelo Anthony has since shaved his head, so he even looks younger than he does in this photo. On top of that, let's not forget that his lawyer is going to be referring to him for the duration of this trial as Mello, a nickname that his lawyer states his friends and family know him by. So not only has Carmelo drastically changed his appearance with that shaved head, again, making him look much younger, but his lawyer also going to be referring to him as Mello for the duration of this trial. By the way, you have the Carmelo supporters, which I'm sure you can hear behind me. They were just chanting that they love their black youth and they deserve protection too. I am live on the ground for opening arguments of the Carmelo Anthony trial.
Prosecutors paint him as the aggressor in a sneak attack, while his defense hammers the split-second fear and chaos of the moment. But the real fireworks are exploding outside the courthouse in a display of Carmelo's self-righteous environment.
Push you if I get close enough.
Wait.
Push you right into that crack. You heard what I said, cracker. Neanderthal, I don't give a f- what you say. You cracker. You cracker.
We gotta get out of the road.
Just get out of the road, please. Get out of the road, please.
You still a cracker. You still a cracker. You're a cracker, motherfucker. You're a cracker. You're a cracker. He a cracker. You a cracker. You a cracker, you ain't gonna get me, cracker. They've been trying to get me, cracker. You ain't gonna get me, cracker.
This isn't just about one knife in the chaos of a track meet. It's another flashpoint exposing how America's justice system and public discourse have been hijacked by identity politics. The trial grinds on, but the real verdict on whether truth can still prevail in this divided republic continues to hang in the balance.
Get my face on camera. We kill crackers. Where I come from, we kill them. And we, if I ever see you outside of Texas, you gonna have a problem. Yep. I'm gonna wrap you up in that flag and I'm gonna set it on fire. I like the smell of burning flesh. Don't you? Don't you? Don't you? See, the time of you having fear on us is over, cracker. It's over, cracker. We ain't scared of you.
John Bound reporting for the Alex Jones Network at alexjoneslive.com.
That's the latest Bound report. Find and share it at alexjoneslive.com. Bound report, Carmelo Anthony's circus of hate. It's a circus of hate, and the clowns are in town. And we're getting a lot of updates as to the latest witness testimony during the Carmelo Anthony trial. We'll bring you that news and so much more on the other side. Stay with us. It's War Room Live on Alex Jones Network, AJN Live on X. Follow us there. Share the link. We'll be right back.
The info war is not gone. It has been reborn. AlexJonesLive.com is the new site to find the next step in the info war. articles, video reports, live streams, breaking news. It's all on AlexJonesLive.com. We need you to be the Paul Revere's and share the links. You can also find us on X at Real Alex Jones and on Rumble at rumble.com/The Alex Jones Show Live. And don't forget to download the app. Go to alexjonesapp.com. The fight continues. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
AlexJonesLive.com. We've only just begun to fight.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to War Room Live. This is your host, Harrison Smith, speaking. We're coming to you live on the Alex Jones Network. Our website is, of course, alexjoneslive.com. That's alexjoneslive.com. You can follow us on Rumble, rumble.com/TheWarRoomLive. Or just search The War Room Live, but that's our official channel, rumble.com/TheWarRoomLive. And, of course, we're always streaming on X at AJN Live. Share those links. Hit the like button. Help us to circumvent the algorithmic restrictions that still dog us daily. They still don't like us very much, despite all of the wonderful stuff that we're doing. Of course, you can follow me at Harrison H. Smith. We got a big show for you today. We're going to start with the trial of Carmelo Anthony. It's day two of the trial, and witnesses are taking the stand and are, of course, confirming that your assumptions were correct the entire time, or my assumptions were correct the entire time. And I assume everybody, like me, understood that from all of the evidence that was available the entire time, this was an unprovoked violent attack against an innocent person by a savage murderer who then lied about it. It's not that complicated, actually. It's pretty cut and dry, as far as I'm concerned. Now, I probably shouldn't even say this because my prediction has not come to fruition yet, but I remember predicting way, way back when it first happened that not only would Carmelo Anthony be shown to be the aggressor and the murder would be shown to be a cold-blooded attack, vicious, violent, and purposeful attack against an innocent person, that was always obvious from the beginning, but the way everything worked out, I always wondered if there wasn't going to be some sort of text message revealed or a witness taking the stand saying, yeah, Carmelo Anthony was going there looking for a fight. The way everything rolled out, the way, and still, as I read the witness testimonies, I think it becomes even more clear that, like, it seems to me like Carmelo Anthony went there to start a fight. You know, he wasn't running in the track race. He was actually suspended from school, and so he wasn't technically allowed to be at the track meet at all. So he wasn't going there to participate. He wasn't going there to support his own team because they would have had to send him home because he wasn't supposed to be allowed at school events. And he was suspended previously for another violent encounter. And I'm still waiting for it. It hasn't been revealed yet, but I still wonder if there's going to be some sort of piece of evidence presented that Carmelo Anthony was going there that day with a knife on purpose to start a fight. That hasn't been revealed yet, but basically everything up to that proves that Carmelo Anthony, of course, acted aggressively and without provocation. And so we have a lot of reports about this from a lot of different people. We'll start with Brianna Morello. She says, day two of the testimony in the Carmelo Anthony murder trial, the jury was shown a photo of the weapon used to kill Austin Metcalf. The photo was of a 5-inch folding knife with blood on it. Frisco police officer Jacob Schalls testified that he found the murder weapon Carmelo Anthony tossed. The knife was found 3 to 4 rows from where the crime took place. Schalls also located Anthony's backpack. Frisco officer Eduardo Cortez testified. When Carmelo Anthony heard Cortez say he had the alleged suspect over the police scanner, Anthony voluntarily said, "I'm not alleged. I did it. He put his hands on me. I told him not to." The jury watched that camera, body camera footage. Frisco firefighter Neil Adams testified and stated that Austin Metcalf was gray and did not have a pulse when he responded. They did everything to save him. Adams got emotional on the stand and started tearing up, and it does sound like a highly emotional court proceedings for everybody involved. As Will Tanner puts it, at Will_Tanner_1, so the new civil rights hero of the John Brown and Nat Turner left was 1, suspended from school and not supposed to be at the meet anyway. 2, showed up with a knife. 3, broke into another team's space for reasons that can only be presumed to be robbery. 4, was told to leave and refused. 5, stabbed the kid who was trying to do the right thing by his teammates and told him to leave. Yet his school let him graduate anyway. He's been out on bail, and all the prospective black jurors said they wanted to let him get away with it. And of course, we see the, as John Bound puts it, the circus that has arrived at the courthouse as well, and videos coming out of just the most, you know, despicable behavior by these people who never thought he was innocent. They never thought he was innocent. They never, you know, thought that this was a legitimate act of self-defense. There would be no reason for them to think that at all. They just sort of are claiming to believe that when in reality, it's pretty obvious. They're just happy that he killed a white kid. Like, they just think that's okay and they think that's fine. And they keep saying that very loudly over and over. So we got a problem. We got a real big problem in this country. Continuing, Mary Ann Martinez, I believe, is in the courtroom there for Daily Mail. She's the Texas Bureau Chief at Mariana Reports. She says, "We're back in court for the afternoon session of the Carmelo Anthony trial. The judge has just asked the media not to identify upcoming witnesses who are minors. We were told who the minors are or what they will be testifying to. 17-year-old Memorial High School male athlete now testifying. We have been told not to give his name. He had been hanging out with Austin on the day of the stabbing. He runs track for Memorial. He was under the tent with Austin Metcalf. Teen is saying that several people confronted Carmelo Anthony and told him to leave the tent. Austin, another boy, and he were among the Memorial High School kids who told Anthony to leave. I remember it getting more aggressive, the teen said. I remember Carmelo refusing to leave, then Austin asked him to leave. Anthony said, touch me and find out, the boy recalled. Boy says Carmelo was asked to leave about 15 times by Austin and several others. He said no one ganged up on him, but he didn't think a fight was going to break out. He thought there was going to be minor pushing at most. Teen says this went on for 2 minutes and adds that both Austin and Carmelo were angry at this point. Boy says Carmelo was provoking Austin. Austin pushed Carmelo and then Carmelo stabbed him. He added the knife came from a backpack in Carmelo's lap. During the back and forth between Carmelo and Austin, Carmelo had his hands in the backpack, the boy said. After the stabbing, Carmelo threw the knife up the bleachers and then ran away. The boy said he didn't expect the stabbing at all. Quote, Austin fell onto the bleachers onto his back, and then he got up and went against the fence and guardrail, and his chest was all bloody. He said, oh my God, the boy said. The boy called the ambulance at that point. Prosecutors asked the boy how hard Austin had pushed Carmelo Anthony. Boy said it was somewhere between a light shove and a hard shove. Hunter was at the bottom of the tent and was not involved in this. That's Austin's brother, Hunter. Boy denies anyone ganged up on Carmelo, which, of course, would be the only reason anybody would actually believe this was self-defense. When is anyone going to talk about the fact Carmelo Anthony was suspended from school and wasn't even allowed to be at the track meet? Again, Marianne Martinez, teen, is saying several people confronted Carmelo Anthony and told him to leave the tent. Austin, another boy, he was among the Memorial High School kids that told Anthony to leave. So it sounds like everybody in the tent was going, look, you got to leave, man. You're not supposed to be here. And finally, Austin sort of got up and tried to make him physically leave, and that's when Carmelo pulled out the knife and stabbed him. Again, an action that it just seems to me to indicate a like preparedness to do this. Like he went there with the knife, deliberately started a problem with people, saying they're holding the knife. He wasn't in any danger. He could have just left. I think he wanted to kill a person. That's my assumption of all of this. Nothing else makes any sense. The boy says Carmelo was provoking Austin. Austin pushed Carmelo and then Carmelo stabbed him. He added the knife came from a backpack in Carmelo's lap. He says, my friend's bleeding everywhere, the boy can be heard saying in a 911 call he placed. You can also hear lots of people shouting in the background in general chaos. Under cross-examination, the boy reveals that Carmelo Anthony wasn't even under the tent. He was sitting on the bleachers just above or north of the tent. What was the problem with that? The defense attorney asked, since Anthony wasn't under the tent. Relative area, the boy responds. He says they were told to keep kids from other schools away from the general area of their tent. Boy testifies that the exchange went on for about 2 minutes, Anthony arriving at the tent being asked to leave. When others asked Carmelo to leave and refused, Anthony became angry. Then both Austin and Carmelo became heated as the exchange went on. Under cross-examination, the boy was asked to show how the shove happened between Austin and Carmelo. Boy and defense attorney stand up and role-play the shove in front of the jury. Boy stated Carmelo is sitting on the bleacher with his hands in his backpack. Other kids are calling his bluff and saying he didn't have anything in his backpack. When Austin moves in to shove push Carmelo, Carmelo pulls the backpack from his knife and plunges it into Austin's chest. This was all part of the same motion. So again, these are some pictures of Carmelo. Carmelo Anthony taunted Austin Metcalf before the stabbing, according to prosecutors. Savannah Hernandez at Sav Says on X writes this: to give you an idea of how difficult it is to get into the courthouse for the Carmelo Anthony trial, one reporter told me she was waiting to get in since 4 a.m. There's a curfew imposed and no one is allowed to be on the courthouse grounds from 11 to 6, but she states people were waiting on the sidewalk near the courthouse as early as 4. Around 10 minutes before the curfew let up, officials allowed people to start lining up to get inside. Keep in mind only select people are allowed inside the actual courtroom, but there's a separate room for media and other attendees where the trial is being streamed. Many Carmelo Anthony supporters have made sure to line up early, so they're the ones in these seats. During jury selection yesterday, I watched them take detailed notes regarding each potential juror as the selection process took place. There are only 27 seats in the alternate room, and strict media rules set in place for this trial restrict excess details from getting out as the trial progresses. So again, the fact that there are any Carmelo Anthony supporters at all should be troubling to you. Because once again, there is no indication whatsoever of any type from Carmelo Anthony or anybody else that this was anything other than a cold-blooded murder. So what you have is a bunch of people who are there going out of their way to go to this courthouse, getting there early to support a cold-blooded murderer. And they know that's what they're doing, and that's what they're doing. And they basically admit that. Which again is just absolutely and completely insane that any of these people live in this country. It's just completely nuts. And of course, how are they able to do this all day, every day, for a week on end? Oh, because they don't actually have jobs? Because actually the American taxpayer are literally funding these people to go antagonize white people at a murder trial of a white kid? Again, just utterly despicable. And they're also trying to dox the jury. Of course, there's a woman that was kicked out yesterday because she had gotten into the courtroom and was using her phone to try to take pictures of the jury. And they kicked her out and actually confiscated her stuff. And then she's running around going, they won't give me my purse back. It's like, well, you're trying to dox the jury to intimidate them to rig a trial because you know that a black person is innocent and you want him to get away with it. So I think you should go to jail, but taking your purse is a great middle ground. No black jurors chosen for Carmelo Anthony trial in fatal Texas track meet stabbing. And that's because the potential black jurors that were called and questioned admitted that they would be biased in favor of Carmelo Anthony because he's black. They literally said, we don't want to send another brother to prison. So you can't work on a jury. That's just how it goes. Yeah, the total jury pool was 600 people. Out of 600 people, they couldn't find a single black person that wouldn't be biased in favor of the cold-blooded, ruthless, stabbing murderer. The man at Carmelo Anthony murder trial saying the only good cracker is a dead cracker and that he'll push a cracker into the grave is Jacob Blake Sr. of Kenosha, Wisconsin, of all places. He has a documented history of anti-white and anti-Semitic statements on social media. His son, Jacob Blake Jr., was shot by police when they were trying to arrest him. It happened in 2020 when police were called out to a domestic disturbance call, the home of Lakeisha Booker, the mother of Jacob Blake Jr.'s children. Booker told dispatchers that Blake was not allowed on the property and had taken her keys and refused to return them. Officers arrived aware of an active felony arrest warrant for Blake issued in July 2020 on charges of third-degree sexual assault, trespassing, and disorderly conduct stemming from a prior domestic abuse attack involving the same woman. Body cam footage and witness video shows officers being attacked by Blake, officers ordering Blake to stop as he fought them. He ignored commands and moved toward an SUV. Police repeatedly yelled, drop the knife. Blake refused and turned towards an officer with a knife in his hand. The police shot him. He survived but was paralyzed from the waist down. The knife was recovered from the driver's side floorboard of the vehicle, and Blake admitted to possessing it. I think I remember this from back in 2020. Was this the guy? Were her children in the car? Was that this guy? He was like trying to steal her car with her children in it. Yeah, there was a video of it, I remember. Unless it was a different person. So again, this model citizen. Well, the whole family's obviously model citizens. The dad is out supporting a murderer. His son is routinely attacking police and violently attacking women. It's like, you know, what would we do without these people? And frankly, you know, we should be paying for everything for them. I mean, why should we expect these people to work and be productive? They're busy. They're obviously very busy. They're busy doing other things like beating up their baby mamas and supporting murderers at trial. So obviously we have to subsidize that as a society. We have to guarantee that they can actually do this on a full-time basis their entire lives should be dedicated to supporting criminals and demonizing white people, and the American taxpayer dollars should fund that. It does, routinely. I mean, not just through the individual welfare recipient of, you know, these types of people, but also the various NGOs that, of course, are set up to do this exact thing and fund this exact activity. Jacob Blake Sr. has since showed up at rallies and press conferences talking about systematic racism and police misconduct. Yeah, I bet. Yeah, I bet he has. In 2020 interviews, he focused on healing and justice for his son while criticizing the lack of charges. However, Facebook posts attributed to his account show repeated slurs against white people, crackers, pink toes. The hell? Is that a slur or a cute nickname? It's weird. Isn't it weird? Isn't that weird? You know, even cracker. Isn't that like whip cracker? Isn't that where that comes from? Or is it something else? You know, now people, I think, if it is like, you've never heard that slur? I think it's what it's cracker. It's like you're the, oh, pink toes. Yeah. Yeah, whip cracker. It's like, okay, your slur for white people is to call them master. That's weird. Master and pink toes. It's like, that's cute. Those are cute. Thank you. And also claims about control of Jewish media, control of media and finance. He posted support for Nation of Islam leader Louis Farrakhan, writing phrases such as, I'm with Farrakhan and a Jew can't tell me crap, period. One stated, one day pink toes will burn for real, for real. He is the same man causing a commotion and threatening white people outside of the Anthony murder trial. And of course, he's literally standing there in front of police saying, I'm going to kill you. You all deserve to die. And I guess he's allowed to do that. I guess he's allowed to do that. Again, this is one of those things where it's like, he is allowed to do that. I don't want the police, you know, arresting people for saying even sort of outrageous things. I think you should be allowed to do that. I do. However, that's only really in a society where the people themselves are like intelligent and thoughtful and, you know, motivated by good things. Because then somebody going out and saying all crackers should die, the only cracker is a good cracker, all this sort of stuff, would be rejected by polite society. You wouldn't have to have police go in and stop that person, because ideally you would have a society that could recognize that some pregnant man, some pregnant black man wearing, you know, Africa, like a dashiki and a big Africa around his necklace saying, kill all white people. Ideally, they should, on their own volition, push him away. But that's not happening. That's not happening. So what do you do with a society that embraces people like this, that embraces the really vicious, hateful rhetoric from these people that they're not shy about putting forward? And where are all the people out there that love to remind us that the Holocaust didn't start with burning Jewish people? It started with the dehumanization. Are we concerned about the rampant dehumanization of white people that's happening all over the world and at a, you know, aggressive clip and resulting in people like this basically making a career of running around antagonizing white people and causing problems? I think you should be deported. J.D. Miles says this about another prosecution witness. This prosecution witness' name is Jalen Matthews. He testified for the state. He's a former Memorial High School track star, now 19 years old. On first seeing Carmelo Anthony enter the Memorial High School tent, quote, he comes in from the top of the bleachers and sits right next to me. It was a little suspicious, random kid. Just because he came out of nowhere with no friends, it raised heads. A lot of people are asking, who is this person? They were directly asking who he is. He, Austin, stood up and turned to him and said he had to get out of the tent. Never raises his voice. He, Carmelo, was serious and not moving at all. On how concerned they were with Carmelo in the tent, he just kind of had a stare into the field, and that's when it got more serious. Nobody is thinking anything like this is going to happen. On why Austin confronted Carmelo, Austin likes to step up for people. On what he witnessed. It was so quick, I didn't really know what had happened. I saw him, Austin, lift up the shirt and the insides of the stabbing. Did it look like Austin was trying to pick a fight? No, sir. Did it look like Carmelo Anthony was trying to pick a fight? Yes, sir. Did this look like self-defense to you? No, sir. Was Carmelo Anthony the aggressor? Yes, sir. Again, I mean, it's as cut and dry as you can get. And it's as horrifying as you can imagine. These kids are going to run a track competition, probably hyper-focused on that, probably excited. It's early in the day. Some random kid wanders up. And, like, it's just insanity. It's just going from a totally normal, average, you know, whatever day to just brutal horror in the moment, in an instant, with no legitimate provocation, no warning that it was about to happen. Just one day you're like, can you please leave our tent? You know, 1 second you're saying, hey, man, you, this isn't your tent, man. You got to leave. And the next you're dying. And the next moment you're dead and your twin brother is kneeling at your side, howling in grief and praying to God to save you. It's just beyond brutal. And there you can see, if the crew can back up that video about 10 seconds, you can see sort of the absurdity of the defense's approach. Oh no, can we back this up about 10 seconds? Because you can see the aerial shot of the tent, and you can see that, like, the tent is set up at the bottom of the bleachers, and then the immediate area of the bleachers, it has all the kids' stuff all over it. So the defense is going, but he wasn't actually under the tent, was he? But it's obvious from the, you know, aerial view, there's the tent, and then there's the bleachers immediately behind the tent, which is where actually most of the team will sit and stay and keep all of their stuff. So it's not like being under the tent or not being under the tent was that big of a difference. The tent denotes the area that the team is supposed to have. Like right there, you can see all the team's stuff is piled up on the bleachers right there because that's the team's area. So again, he wanders over. Wasn't allowed to be at the track event. Wasn't supposed to be there at all. Had been suspended from school for another violent incident. Shows up with a knife. Deliberately goes to provoke these people. Stabs Austin Metcalf in the heart. Throws the knife into the bleachers and runs away, but gets caught immediately. Again, I don't think he is like a criminal genius or anything, but I'm still operating under the assumption that this was first degree murder. I mean, this was pre-planned. This was not heat of the moment. This was not a big fight just getting out of hand. This was Carmelo Anthony probably being pissed off about other stuff and deciding he was going to go see if anybody would mess with him. And like, you know people like this. I know people. I have friends like this, right? They're in a bad mood. They'll just walk around looking for an excuse, right? Looking for somebody to run into them, looking for somebody to insult them so they can start something. I think that's what Carmelo Anthony was doing that day, and I think he went there on purpose with a knife to stab somebody. But he wanted it to be a fight first so he could claim self-defense. That's my assumption. The prosecution called a 17-year-old witness to the stand. Wierski cost the 17-year-old, if he likes to hold on to things in his hands when he gets nervous, the 17-year-old was holding a football in the stand, which he showed the jury. So this judge is just going to allow the witness to take a stand holding a football? Wow. This is Mr. Dennis Bryan, a black man, who is obviously very shocked and, you know, horrified that a 17-year-old kid would want to hold a football to ease his anxiety while testifying in a capital murder case. Wow. Wow. I can't believe it. Wow. This is so biased. This judge, he must be a racist or something. I mean, are they going to let the black kids hold their knives when they go up? You know, their comfort knives, their therapy knives when they get up on the stand? Probably not. That's racism. So, you know, we'll bring any updates that arrive, but I mean, it's just going to be witness after witness, evidence after evidence showing Carmelo Anthony's a brutal murderer. That's it.
I don't sell crap. Bovine colostrum. Then I'll get back to news. I didn't do any plug in the first hour. And Bigly, about a year ago, puts out a survey. A lot of you that are, you know, if you're a VIP, you get surveys. And, you know, once a month or something, they'll ask, hey, what are you wanting? Or what are you liking best? Or what products would you like? And that's smart to ask customers that, right? And you're kind and you tell us. And it came back. Bovine colostrum was in the top two or three every time. And so was high-grade beef tallow, which we now have for you, as you requested. And it's a great seller. Not rocket scientist to ask your customers what they want. That's the number one rule of sales. Well, have a great product and find out what your customer wants. And you can say the customer's always right. I think there's something better I'm going to tell you, but I'm not going to argue with it. But that's an important rule of sale, but I don't think it's the most ethical point. I'll actually tell you what I think I need to know. So we got samples of it in before we even private labeled it from a top place to say, hey, you got to try this. Well, and now I'm taking it because I know how good it is. I'm like, okay, the survey wants bovine colostrum, the first milk of 2 weeks out of a mammal. I know it supercharges the immune system. I know it has all these immunity factors that goes in. It's like the natural vaccine. I mean, I know it's great. I know that going back to Germany hundreds of years ago in the UK, and even out west here in the U.S., they had a sickly kid or a preemie. They would give them the colostrum. They would call it the first milk of a donkey. It was like, it's like always in all the literature, like the medical doctors, like that's the, oh my God, donkey. Donkey colostrum is like, whoa, I mean, like that, donkey. And then horse is good. Goats are good, but it's always donkey's the best. It says, you know, the first 2 weeks milk, the colostrum of a genie. That's in medical books from Germany, the UK, the US. That's how powerful colostrum is. Well, we don't have big, you know, creameries and dairies with a bunch of female donkeys, so you're going to have to settle with the cow. But it's good. And so they send in the canister of the company we're going to private label it from, and I'm like, okay. And so I throw it in the back of my car with some other stuff, and a couple days later, I go to have dinner at my parents', and I go, hey, my mom takes, I've seen her take colostrum and stuff. It was women like their hair and their nails and all that. I'll give her this. So I go in and give her a couple canisters of it and everything. And then about 2 months later, my mom is like, Alex, I want some more of that. That is incredible.
Several weeks later.
Mom, you got to listen. The products are amazing.
Well, this one, like I said, I don't do testimonials. There's a lot of good products, but this is the first one that I can go, whoa. It's in a back problem that I've had since Alex was born. Is almost completely gone after 50, however many years. And my hair is much thicker than it has been. And I have good hair anyway, but it's much thicker. And this is brand new.
Turned darker.
And darker.
So now she gets it from us, she orders it from us, but that just gives you an example of I'm not selling crap, okay? I'm not gonna sell you something that doesn't work. Now, with colostrum, it's going to take, you're going to feel it right away in a few days, but it's going to take, you know, months for you to see it with the skin and the hair and the nails and all that for it to really kick in. But I'm telling you, you are nuts if you don't go to the alexjonesstore.com and get these right now. Just go get it. And then we can expand and have our legal battles and beat the New World Order, and you'll be as happy as a pig in poop. And there's a bunch of sales on all the best-selling products right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And I can't be bought. I am simply funded by you if you like the work we're doing.
Nice try, globalist. But Alex Jones is still here, and he's not leaving.
Folks, this is War Room Live, AlexJonesLive.com, Rumble.com/TheWarRoomLive, Rumble.com/TheWarRoomLive. That's how you find us directly. And, of course, support us by going to TheAlexJonesStore.com. TheAlexJonesStore.com is the only way to support us. We make it incredibly easy for you to do so. It's 40 to 50% off site-wide right now. No discount code needed. All of the t-shirts, all of the hats, all of the hoodies, all of the supplements, of course, you're getting 40 to 50% off everything, including all apparel, right now, thealexjonesstore.com. That sale ends tonight, so don't waste time. Go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. It's also your last day to enter to win both the custom H1 Hummer and the 2026 Dodge Charger, plus $20,000 in cash. This is the last day, I believe. Yeah, this is the last day to enter to win both of these. So whatever you purchase at thealexjonesstore.com, you get basically an entry every penny you spend. So spend a dollar, you get 100 times entries. This week is usually the week when the winner makes his purchase. And, of course, we've given away like over 20 of these cars so far. And somebody's got to win these. Could be you. All you got to do is go to thealexjonesstore.com and make a purchase. Count your lucky stars. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Support us. Keep us on the air. Keep us in the fight. And keep us telling the truth about things. Keep somebody out here telling the truth about stuff. And on that note, I want to go to clip number 9 here. This is a very interesting response to a very bad faith question about about racism and the concept of racism and the lie of racism that is all predicated on lies. Let's go to clip number 9 here. I thought this was a very interesting and thorough and good faith response to a bad faith question. Let's watch. It says, POV, I want an actual racist person to explain to me why they're racist. Audio.
A predictable response by pointing out genetic clustering or crime statistics or anthropology or black fatigue even, which most of us know about or are at least grappling with by now. I'd like to start by pointing out that the term racist is just an anti-white slur. What you may call racist is almost always just pattern recognition, or in its most innocent form, the simple preference of mating with people who look like you and share your cultural and ancestral history. Again, only whites are condemned for this. The word racist can technically be used to describe anyone, but effectively can only be utilized against white people. What is a so-called racist actually doing when he's being racist? Usually, it's making observations, and this is often framed as an irrational hatred, seeing that someone has more melanin than you and arbitrarily assigning a moral quality to that physical feature. This is a false premise, and it's important to reject this at its root. Race isn't really your skin color. It's a foundational component of your identity. It's an experience. Your identity is how you understand yourself and your relationship to the world around you, your beliefs, qualities, and expressions. These things directly inform what we're actually observing, which is cultural attitudes. According to Pew Research, 77% of blacks in America believe in some form of racial reparations. So in other words, the vast supermajority of black people believe that they are entitled to your money because of slavery that they didn't experience. On the other hand, only 18% of Americans, meaning white people, believe in reparations. These are two very contrary cultural attitudes that are directly informed by self-identified racial category. Why is this a problem? If there exists two groups with equal rights that possess societal grievances that conflict, one is going to have to trump the other. This necessarily means that one group's right will have to be ignored or even violated in favor of the others. So what's the takeaway? The term racist is just a fake linguistic spell invented by and propagated from a set of subversive actors to siphon resources from white people in favor of foreign groups that hate you. I'm glad that you have a black wife that you're super happy with, but this specific individual anecdotal experience does not represent the vast majority of interracial relations in the United States, and it certainly gives you no right to morally grandstand to people who simply use their eyes and ears to observe the brutal facts of this world that we live in. So to answer your question, I am a racist because you have been brainwashed into thinking that as a white man, my acknowledgement of reality should be labeled that way.
I think that's a great way to put it. You're not allowed to acknowledge reality as a white person. Yeah, more or less. But you really have to understand how absurd this concept is and how it has been implanted in our society. Now, racist, the term racist kind of has a funny history because it was originally written like it was made up. The term racist was made up by a person to define themselves. Basically, in like, it must have been the 1910s or 20s, it was some French guy, I can't remember who it is, but this was when sort of the concept of nationalism was rising, and he basically came up with this term saying, you know, I actually want to think about things in terms of race, I'm a racist, but it only got into common parlance and only became a sort of negative term and used as a pejorative when there's a book called, I believe it was called Racism, by Magnus Hirschfeld, I believe it was, who of course was the doctor in Weimar Germany that performed the first transgender surgeries there. So it's kind of interesting that the person that both brought it may have been Gaston Laval who originally came up with it, but racism as a negative term, as in a negative context, was popularized by the same guy that popularized transgender surgery. So might be some interesting connections to be made there. But regardless, you know, I still to this day think the best way to think about what racism, the term really is think about if they came out tomorrow with the term saying familyist and said it is the worst thing you could possibly do. The worst thing you could possibly do, the worst thing you could possibly be is a familyist. How dare you value your family over another, because that's all the race is. It's an extended family. It's all the nation is. It is an extended family. The word nation shares the same root as the word nature. It is the
Latin root word for birth, right? Natal comes from it as well. It's about your birth. It's about your family. It's about your condition. Yeah, Racism by Magnus Hirschfeld, the transgender doctor in Weimar, Germany. Really interesting stuff, huh? So the idea of racism is kind of absurd on the face of it, in the same way that a familyism would be absurd. And that is, again, the way you need to think about it, because if I ask you, you know, who do you value more, your daughter or somebody else's, it's actually natural and good and right. Quiet, kid. It's actually good and right to value your kid over other people. Does that mean that you hate every other family because you have a familial connection to your children, your wife, your parents? That means that you somehow want every other family to be destroyed and that you think your family has a right to rule over other family? Like, what are you talking about? That is insane. But that's what's extrapolated from, hey, I'm white. I like white people. I want white people to do well. They're just like, really? Is that so, sir? It's like, what the hell? It's crazy. It is crazy. And it's taken, you know, 100 years of deliberate, persistent propaganda to get us to this point. Yeah, an essay on the inequality of the human races. It's a racialist work of French diplomat and writer author De Gobineau. It argues there are intellectual differences between human races, that civilizations decline and fall when races are mixed and the white race is superior. It is considered to be an influential example of early scientific racism. So he created the word racist, but then Magnus Hirschfeld wrote a book about how wrong and bad and evil it is. But then obviously no other race of people is even expected to appropriate any of this stuff about race. Like, literally nobody cares if Jewish people support Jewish people or black people support black people. I care in the sense of the hypocrisy. I care because it's not born out of a general, you know, goodwill towards all men, but also I'm black, so I like black people too, and I understand them. It doesn't come from, it's not a general goodwill. It is a insider-outsider paradigm that they work on. It's more accurate. That is more accurate. Thank you, crew. So, what is racism actually? You know, it's similarly the absurdity of calling anybody that's not white a minority. When if you look at the globe, if you look at the earth, white people are a vanishingly small minority, something like 7% of the world's population, a staggering decline from the 30% of the world population white people represented a couple hundred years ago, or 100 years ago, a little bit more, before World War I, essentially. And so you've got this just like assumption that Europe just owes everybody else everything else, and Europeans owe everything to everybody else. And again, we can explore this forever, and people have, but still, to this point, people still think that, like, calling somebody a racist is and should be the worst thing you could ever call somebody. And the whole thing is just, it just doesn't make any sense. It's just meaningless. It's nothingness. If there were actually, you know, vicious racists out there, well, even then, I mean, it just doesn't exist. So, like, why entertain the possibility of something happening when it's not actually happening? What's actually happening is that the vast majority of people labeled racist are in fact just white people who are defending themselves. Yeah, and then you look at the actual stuff that the actual left-wingers, like this was written by a Jewish person for the Smithsonian, Assumptions and Aspects of Whiteness and White Culture in the United States. And it's basically everything good. It's everything good and lovely and powerful and positive. It's rugged individualism. It's the family structure. It's an emphasis on the scientific method, history, Protestant work ethic, future orientation, aesthetics, religion, status, power, authority, time, competition, justice, holidays, communication. It's like everything good. Again, it's not that complicated, folks. They say whiteness is evil. What is whiteness? All the things that make an individual strong, all the things that make a family strong, all the things that make you confident and capable and able to resist coercion and pressure from outside forces. It's everything that makes you less able to be controlled, they label as whiteness, and have everybody in the country demanding its abandonment because they consider it evil because it's whiteness. Again, the individual is the primary unit, self-reliance, independence, and autonomy, being highly valued and rewarded. The nuclear family. The family structure. This is whiteness, and it must be destroyed. The nuclear family. Father, mother, 2 to 3 children is the ideal social unit. Husband is breadwinner and head of household. Wife is homemaker and subordinate to the husband. Children should have their own rooms and be independent. So, I mean, literally, what that describes there, those four bullet points, are the answer to how do you make the most successful, prosperous, and happy people in the world? How should we organize our family structure so that people turn 18 and are capable and loved and supported and powerful? How do we do that? You follow the whiteness instructions, actually. You actually do what they say white people traditionally do, because white people created the best societies through trial and error. Those practices, the best ones, become what we call tradition, and a bunch of psychotic third worlders are trying to destroy it and tear it all down rather than just follow the instructions as laid out, because the instructions themselves are being labeled as white supremacy and rejected on that basis. I mean, literally, that like, what is whiteness chart? You could change the title to, like, what is greatness? What is power? You know, what it, like, individual power, not power over other people, but power to resist other people. It's literally whiteness. Okay. So basically all the anti-whiteness really all does come from like jealousy and envy at the end of the day. That's why they all want to move here. That's why they all do move here. Do you know that 25% of Mexicans live in America and 70% of them are on welfare? That's the latest number from the from an institute that studies this stuff. 25% of Mexico, this is White Papers Policy Institute. We have been the most generous country in the world to our detriment. 25% of all Mexicans live in the U.S. 70% of them rely on welfare. 10% of Guatemalans live here. 77% of them are on welfare. 12% of Nicaraguans live in America. 75% of them are on welfare. 12% of Haitians live here. 53% rely on our welfare. I'll say, you know, have you ever read the story Harrison Bergeron by Kurt Vonnegut? Describes a dystopian future where everyone has to be equal, and that means that the strongest and smartest people have to have they have to be disabled, basically. If you're too smart, they make you wear an earpiece that distracts you constantly, or if you're too strong, they make you wear a weighted vest to slow you down. America's Harrison Bergeron. The immigrants, so 25% of Mexico lives in America. They're taking our jobs, but they're also living on welfare to the tune of 70%. So just like picture America without all of this crap. Can you even imagine what America would be like without all this crap, without the endless burden of foreign peoples relying on us, or foreign wars for foreign powers that benefit us not at all, or the people here that live off welfare generation upon generation? I mean, could you imagine? So, like, think about the fact that 50% of all jobs created, I think that was a number, could have been worse, at least 50% of all jobs created since, like, 2004 have gone to foreigners. 90% of new jobs created since COVID have gone to foreigners. Tens of millions of foreigners are living here on either, you know, fake visas, fake IDs, not paying into Social Security. They're taking our jobs, again, 50% of them since 2004, 90% since COVID. They're also all living on welfare. They're also scamming welfare that we see in the Somali community, in the Indian community, $90 billion or whatever it is. Then you've got the money being sent back to Mexico, not getting taxed. Then you've got, again, the welfare just of Americans here that intergenerationally subsist entirely on taxpayer money. And it's just like and yet, folks, most people in America don't even think anything's wrong. They think we aren't being stolen from enough. It's crazy how powerful we are. It's crazy how productive we are. And it's insane that we don't benefit from it, that we haven't benefited from it, that it has all been stolen from us. And the saddest part about this is that other countries are laughing at us. We can go to clip six here. This is on Chinese TV. This is infuriating, but I got to say he's got a point here. Let's go to clip number six now. I'll read along. He says, California's high-speed rail was promised, but not 1 kilometer was built. In the 80s, he says, I visited the U.S. High-speed rail was proposed. We didn't even have highways yet. I thought impressive, but nothing came of it for many reasons. In Chinese terms, no party leadership, no political structure representing the people's overall interest. Drive from France into Germany. The signs are different. Germany has no speed limits. France has very strict speed limits. We just visited Serbia. China helped build the line to Hungary. The Serbia section is complete. The standards are interesting. It's 200 kilometers an hour, but reserve options upgrade to 250 kilometers high-speed rail. In Hungary, that section is 160 kilometers per hour and can't change. It's strictly EU standards. You mentioned Chinese rail doesn't profit. Recouping construction costs through fares could take very long. But what it drives is the flow of people, traffic, and information, all movement and its impact on society. And the economy is immeasurable. So I think we always calculate the total account, what you said, back to party leadership about overall interest. What we calculate is look to the General Secretary's economic thinking, he interrupts. There's a point about supply also creating demand. Don't overthink construction. Construction. Once the highway exists, the arteries open up, and now demand emerges naturally. China, for example, built many roads in rural areas, great infrastructure. Some felt it wasn't economically justified, but conversely, building that transport raised the economic value of those areas. Transport brings life to that place. Also, undertaking large-scale public infrastructure requires long-term investment and patient waiting, as you said at the start. Planning takes time and enormous funding, but these reflect our system's strengths. That time, if placed in the West, or that massive investment left to private enterprise, would they invest? That's the difficulty. But because transport infrastructure typically runs long cycles, facing huge risks in many areas, it simply can't move forward. Public means everyone has a share. You should enjoy convenient, fast quality service. But in the U.S., public really just means a safety net. In many sectors, so-called public provision tends to be low quality in education, in healthcare, and likely in transport to a degree, too. As I said before, though contrast you feel how valuable socialism is, the superior of socialism is clear. Socialism forwards, very valuable. Also mentioned, our integrated transport network strongly emphasizes serving the people, ensuring ordinary people genuinely feel real tangible gains. People are thrilled to hear high-speed rail is coming to their hometown. Before, it didn't seem to matter whether high-speed rail came or not. Not everyone feels it. My country has it, too. That feeling is completely different. So again, they're laughing at us. While Japan's bullet trains have been running since 1964, United States just approved the first mile of true high-speed track 62 years later. And of course, in California, they spent literally tens of billions of dollars and built nothing. They spent tens of billions of dollars and built nothing with it. Is that capitalism? I don't think so. Capitalism, you don't spend money if there's not a return to it. You can't get access to billions of dollars of funds without proving your worth first, because the people who give you money, it's their money and they're concerned about where they're giving it. And they're only going to give it if you have a proven track record of an ability to do what you say you're going to do. When it's the government money, then tens of billions of dollars can go missing and nobody will even notice. Do you think that he talks about visiting America in the 80s and we were talking about high-speed rail and he was impressed. Now China has this massive high-speed rail network. At the time, in the 1980s, China didn't even have highways. Now it's got incredible highways. It's got incredible airports. It's got incredible high-speed rail systems. America has utterly failed to create anything, basically, since the 1980s. Is that because we've been we've become more capitalistic since the 80s? Is that because our government has incrementally and increasingly become more socialist or less socialist? No, the difference is nationalism. It's not the system that matters as much. Russia also has amazing subway systems and trains. They're not communist, and yet they're maintained and built, you know, in a much better way than we have. Japan obviously has no communism, and you could literally eat off the floor in any subway station in Tokyo because it's just that clean and well produced. It's nationalism at the end of the day. It's people who actually see their fellow Americans as their extended family members and want to work together to uplift everybody, that don't see every opportunity as an excuse to screw everybody over. Like, think about the fact that in Seattle, the socialist mayor that just got elected has come out and announced that she is not interested and will not be pursuing any claims of fraud against the Medicare industry, even though it's been presented to her that there are, you know, ethnic minorities like Indians or Somalians who are filing false reports and screwing the system for millions of dollars. She says, I don't care. I think that's racist and I'm not going to investigate it. So my question is to you, what is the smart thing to do here? What is the smart thing to do here? In reality, the smart and immoral thing to do is to take that as a green light and start scamming the system relentlessly. I mean, what do you do when the mayor says, hey, millions of dollars might be stolen from the government, but I'm not looking into it. I will not be investigating theft. I will not be investigating fraud. I mean, you can either sit back and let all the Somalis make off with the tens of millions of dollars, or you can start up your own clinic and start filing invoices and getting money. Like, that's what happens when you have these people in power. They don't care about fraud. They don't see it as a bad thing when tens of billions of dollars get misappropriated. We are spending infinite amounts of money and giving away infinite amounts of jobs to hostile foreigners who are bankrupting us completely, totally. We have gone, no pun intended, totally off the rails since the 1980s. And it's nationalism that'll get us back. It's a care for our nation.
These new data centers will oversee everyone in the galaxy. I will be in full control.
Power levels are stable. Proceed with the install. Copy that. Installing the module now. Connection confirmed. All green.
Cable secured. Power to the cluster. Initiating boot sequence. Component locked. Running diagnostics. Archive systems online. Report to command.
Construction team, report status. Power grid stable, TK-421. Cabling complete, no faults. Proceed to phase two for the Empire.
Things are going according to plan. The Emperor will be happy. The Empire demands perfection.
Status report. Any anomalies?
Diagnostics are clear, sir.
Proceed with the calibration. Watch for fluctuations.
I find your desire for privacy insignificant. The Empire's new data network will observe every corner of the galaxy, every signal, every act of disloyalty.
A disturbance in the Force there is. Feel it, you can.
Those who obey have nothing to fear. Those who resist will be terminated.
Distance.